Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Midday. Dan Roderick's here on WYPR, WYPF, WYPO, and streaming live online at WYPR.org. Thanks again for making Midday part of your day. Surprisingly, at least surprising to me, one of the top issues getting attention during this year's gubernatorial race is that of ex-offenders, preparing them for life outside the walls, helping them to find jobs, and making sure they don't go back to prison. In fact, all three Democratic candidates for governor have plans to reduce recidivism, which is especially problematic in Baltimore City. According to recent statistics, about 6,000 former inmates return to the city each year from prison. Between 40 and 50% of them return to the Department of Corrections within 3 years. Now, that still is high. It sounds high, but it's better than the national average, which can reach up to 60%. Homelessness, joblessness, depression, health issues, these are all problems ex-offenders run into following their release. To address some of these issues, there are a number of Baltimore nonprofits that have stepped in to help this at-risk population transition back into society. They've been doing this for years. Today on our show, we'll be talking about one of these organizations with a new program, Vehicles for Change. And you might have heard about Vehicles for Change because it's been around since 1999 with the mission of repairing donated cars and then selling them at an average price of about $750 to families with financial challenges, low-income families that have a tough time getting around with transportation, need a set of wheels. Since it started, Vehicles for Change has sold more than 4,700 cars to families in Maryland, Washington, D.C., and Virginia. Last year, Vehicles for Change launched its Center for Automotive Careers, a program that trains low-income individuals to work in the automotive industry. In this hour, we're going to hear from three ex-offenders who've all been helped by Vehicles for Change and their new program. A little later this hour, Edward Ray is going to be joining us and Tavon Williams. We start the show, though, with Alfred Johnson, our first guest on the show today on Midday. Alfred, nice to meet you. Thanks for being here.
I'm glad. It's a pleasure to be here.
Alfred Johnson's in our studio. He's wearing a maroon-colored shirt with his name on one side, and the other side says Vehicles for Change. It's the badge there above your left pocket. So right now, would you just come off the job to come in and talk with us?
Correct.
Oh, excellent. So you're at Vehicles for Change now.
Yes, I've been there over a year.
And you've been training to be an auto mechanic? You actually repair cars?
Correct. I was trained and got my start there and surrounded by three other amazing mechanics, Muhammad, Mark, and Jason, who've trained me and put me in the position I'm in, let me use their tools, and now I possess my own tools and financing 20-some thousand worth of tools.
Really?
Correct.
Excellent. You said you've been there for a year now, Alfred.
Yes, a little over a year.
Had you had any automotive experience before? Had you ever worked on cars? I know we're going to talk about your prison life because you were in prison for a long
Correct.
Time. So going back even to when you were a kid, a teenager, did you ever work on cars?
I mean, I've always been mechanically inclined. My stepfather was a mechanic for Yellow Cab Company, and when I was while we were incarcerated, I also took an automotive program inside the walls.
I was going to ask you about that. So I know there are some training programs for some inmates at some of the prisons. It's not as extensive as some people think it should be, but so you did go through some automotive training
Correct.
While in prison. Where was it? Was that Hagerstown? Where were you? Do you remember?
MCIJ.
In Jessup, yeah. And so did you get a certificate or something?
Correct,
from that?
Yeah. Yes.
Now, you were in prison quite a while, so let's go over that a little bit, Alfred. This goes back to the 1980s, right? You're 45 years old now, so
Correct.
What is this? This takes us back to when you were in your late teens, early 20s?
Teens.
You were teens.
Yeah, 17.
So where'd you grow up?
In East Baltimore, the old Lafayette Projects, high rises.
Mm, I remember them. And so what happened? How'd you get into trouble?
I believe in growing up, I had support. My mother was married. My stepfather was a Vietnam vet, structured. I believe as I got older and progressed through school, I allowed myself to be lured into the streets and got away from school to study. Very artistic. I had opportunities. I just got pulled into that life.
Yeah. Could you say you liked school when you were a teenager?
I did. I loved school.
You did like school.
Certain things, yes.
Where'd you go? Like middle school? What do you remember?
Lombard, Hamilton. Was a wrestler. Always was athletic. I just chose a different path.
So when you say you got pulled into the street, you were what? 15, 16, something like that?
I would say yes. I started like 14, you know, hanging out, going to school. Not going to school.
Well, you know, teenagers hang out, right? But you were hanging out with guys that you knew were into criminal behavior, were selling drugs, or what?
Yeah, it started that way. And, you know, you see it in the neighborhood and you go away from your own peers and maybe you hang out with older guys and you want to be with them and it progresses. And, you know, in that life, it can be anything from hold this and you're holding that, you're making a little money, then you want to do more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And then you get...
They pay you to hold some drugs?
It could be like that. You could start... Well, for me, it was that way, and it progressed to other things.
It progressed to a street fight in your case, right?
Correct.
Can you just tell us a little bit about what happened? Because this is what led to you're going to prison for more than 20 years, right?
Correct. I mean, I was young and selling narcotics, happenstance. I had a weapon, and two older guys came, confronted me, an altercation transpired. Shots was fired, and that's what led me to serve such amount of time.
You were actually convicted of a second-degree homicide, second-degree murder?
Correct.
From someone was killed in this fight?
Correct.
Wow. So you were how old at that time, Alfred?
17, I believe, 17,
They treated you like an adult in the court system?
Yes.
And your sentence was, my notes show, 35 years, is that right?
Correct.
Wow. And you did most of that?
Most of that. I mean, I was young. I went into an adult facility. And looking back at it, I mean, I had no concept of the criminal justice system justifiable homicide, whether it was diminished capacity. I didn't know about a reverse waiver for juveniles. I mean, it was two adults. I mean, and not to minimize it because they're someone's uncle, father, family member. It was a bad circumstance for everyone's involved, myself included.
When you got to prison, you were still a young guy.
Yes.
I've always wondered, you know, and I always ask when I interview, because I've interviewed others who've been in your shoes, going into an adult prison, even younger than you sometimes. I interviewed a guy who went in at 15. Yes. You went in at 17.
Yes.
Can you tell us what that was like? We don't have a whole lot of time, but...
Briefly, I could say that the Department of Public Safety and Correction Service has changed. I mean, back in those days, it was tougher. You know, now it's more, it's cameras, it's less, you know what I mean, violence, it's more programs. It's, even with juveniles, they're not thrown into certain situations in high securities, they're segregated.
So it's better
it
now.
It evolved. Yeah,
it's prison, better than it was when you went
prison,
in.
Prison evolved. That's my way out. On my way out, I've seen how younger guys really have a chance, man, to not, I mean, fight their way through. I mean, if they come in and keep their head straight, a lot of the things that generations before them would have to go through doesn't exist now.
I have two questions for you. What do you think, looking back now, because you're 45 years old now, looking back to that young man, 17 years old, Alfred Johnson, what do you think would have kept you from that street fight that led to someone else being killed? What would you have changed if you could have magically reached back, grabbed that 17-year-old Alfred Johnson? What do you think that would have been? What would you have done?
Honestly, I would say that to have what took so long to gain a self-confidence in oneself, to not worry about pleasing others, and to not have an image or a role that you play in the streets or anywhere, even in a job. man, it's the core person, the core self that matters, you know.
Yeah, how could you do that though? What would you, because that's tough when you're an adolescent, you're still developing your personality, who you are, right? Yeah.
But you know, when you get out into a life or you even in a job, sometimes someone can get caught up into it so much that they actually think that the role or whatever they're doing is real, but it isn't. Now, you're not that drug dealer, you're not that person, you're more than that. You're a son, a father, a person in the community. It's a core person that you are.
Well, where would that message have come from when you were 17? Because you sound like you had a good home, right? Your mother cared about you. You had a stepfather who was around.
Yes, it was rebel. It was the rebel rebelling, and you know it's even in the Bible how that rebelling goes.
Okay, well now my second question was the Alfred Johnson who was 40 years old 5 years ago, 42, getting ready to come out of prison. You're hoping to come out of prison. You're hoping to be paroled, right?
Correct.
So. What got you there? How did you succeed in getting paroled after 27 years?
Change.
What did you say to the parole board?
I mean, change. I mean, I've gained in true compassion for my crime, which is a must. One has to internalize it and realize the weight of any action that you committed or done, the effect that it has, not only on yourself, but the community at large. I've gained true compassion. And with that, I was able to express it. And in many ways, I believe the Parole Commission and the Division of Correction seen a change in me from that 17-year-old in a history in prison who changed through acquiring education, college courses, automotive training. It was a progression, acting with youth, acting as a mentor.
And when you came out of prison, Alfred, what did you have, in terms of tools moving forward? I know literally you have tools now because you're a mechanic, but that was over the last year or so. What made the difference for you?
I'm a great support system. I believe my family, my sister, my relatives, even VFC is like a family to me.
Vehicles for change.
I mean, the mechanics there allowed me to use their tools when I had none. I mean, and they gave me even Kim there would give me coat, bring coat clothes to me.
Right.
Everyone was lovely, and so it's amazing. I'm very humbled.
So you've been with Vehicles for Change for a year, and you said you've invested $20,000 in your own equipment?
I'm financing...
Your own tools?
Yes, I'm financing my own tools. Most of it is paid.
So what is your hope to do? You like being a mechanic?
I love being a mechanic. Some days it's harder than others.
Right.
Yeah, it's not an easy job. And I'm looking forward to attending classes soon to at CCBC, you know, to become certified in other ways.
Well, I appreciate you coming in here to talk with us today. Tell us a bit of your story, Alfred. I'm sure there's a lot more to it than we had time for today. But Alfred Johnson is with the Vehicle for Change's Center for Automotive Careers. This is a program that they started just like a year ago or so, right?
Yeah.
It's less than a year old, and the idea is to train the unemployed for jobs in automotive careers. So Alfred's going to stay with us for a while in this hour of midday, and then when we get back, we're going to speak with another man who went through this program. Edward Ray is going to be joining us as we tell you his story and how Vehicles for Change helped him. So please stay with us. This is Midday on WYPR. Dan Rodericks here. A short break. And welcome back. Dan Rodericks here on Midday. The Center for Automotive Careers, a new program, fairly new program, component of Vehicles for Change. The goal of the Center for Automotive Careers is to train unemployed and underemployed adults for jobs in automotive services. The center, it was set up in two phases. I said it was less than a year old. Actually, the first phase of the program launched last September, concentrating on auto detailing, training those in auto detailing, and the second part, training in auto technicians, auto mechanics, and that's what Alfred Johnson's done. Now we turn to Edward Ray. He graduated from the organization's Center for Automotive Careers and now works full-time for Diamond Detailers. So Edward Ray is an auto detailer, and it's great to have you on the show, Edward. Thank you for coming in, too.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
You're an ex-offender, too. So you like Alfred, you spent some time in prison. How much time did you spend in prison?
Well, I spent 3 years in prison.
Just 3 years. Where did you grow up?
East Baltimore, Bond, and Preston.
And what got you into trouble? How did you end up in prison for 3 years?
Well, had an armed robbery in 1992. Just running the street, just not listening.
Just not listening to my parents.
My mom. Yeah, she was a single mom, yes.
Yeah. How old were you at the time?
At the time of the arrest, I was 22 years old. But my criminal activity started way before then.
Mm-hmm.
Started when I was 14, 1985.
And what happened in the years since then? You said you spent 3 years in prison?
Oh, yes. From 1992 to 1995. Even when I left prison in 1995, I continued to do crime, and all the way up to last year, 2012, basically.
And were you incarcerated during any of that period?
In and out of prison. That was my whole life story.
And so you're 40, how old now?
I'm 43 years old.
43. You know, I've interviewed guys in their 30s and 40s who come out of prison, ex-offenders, and they're the ones who are tired. They're the ones who say, I've heard things over the years like, I'm tired of going in and out of prison. I'm tired of shaming my family. I'm tired of sleeping on porches and couches of various people, and I want to settle down, and I don't want to go back. And that's what I've heard. Is that how you feel?
Well, yes, I do feel that way. I have a great mom. You know, she loved me till I learned to love myself. I had a son, Antoine. He's 11 years old, and I think that was my change there. You know, I didn't want my son to grow up without having me there to show him the right directions and to keep him away from the gang members and all those other activities that's in the street.
How's he doing with that?
My son is doing very well. He's an honor roll student, so Antoine's really? Well on his way.
And where does he live?
He lives in East Baltimore.
Yeah.
Yes.
What took you so long, though? I understand what you just said about your son.
Yes.
He's 11 years old.
He's 11 years old.
So I wonder, you know, why didn't that make you change 11 years ago?
I wasn't ready. You know, like I said, this last time I was arrested, just made me sit down and think that I'm 43. I didn't have a career. I didn't know what I wanted to do. No direction of what I wanted to do, just running.
Had you finished high school, Edward?
Well, I have a GED.
So you got a GED while you were in prison
No, I had a GED before I went to prison.
Okay. Okay. Oh, before you went?
Yes.
Okay. So what got you to Vehicles for Change? How did you end up there?
Well, I had went to CFUF. That's
the Center for Urban Families.
Yes,
Joe Jones.
Joan Jones. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Right.
Okay.
You know, that's another organization that does a lot of work with ex-offenders.
Yes. Yeah. That was my start there. It changed me. Made me realize that it's something better in life. You know, Vehicles for Change taught me how to help people. You know, it's not all about me. I seen the smiles on people's faces when they received their vehicles.
Well, tell us about that. So you went from Center for Urban Families.
Yes, sir.
And you heard about this program at Vehicles for Change, which only started last year, right?
Yes, sir. They came to CFUF to recruit people. And I was one of the first classes that I was in the first class of Vehicle for Change to graduate from
in auto detailing.
Yes, I was the first alumni. So from there, Diamond Detail came and gave us interviews, and they picked me. They chose me again. To come and learn how to detail vehicles.
Now, what do you like about that? Because I'm pretty good at washing a car, but detailing, that's an art, isn't it?
It is. It's like going to the barbershop receiving a haircut. You know, you see you come in there looking all rugged, and when you leave, you're shining. So that was, you know, I like clean things. So, you know what I mean? That just made me realize that I'm good at this, and it's something that I can continue to do.
Mm-hmm. And that also involves eliminating little scratches and things from cars, right?
Yes. Well, that's a little more intense as far as the scratches and things, mm-hmm. because then that's when you have to bring a buffer and things like that out. So,
do you see yourself making a career from this?
First of all, you
sounds like you like the work, but could you see yourself doing this for a long time?
Well, this is what I'm going to do. I feel like it's the first time in my life that I've learned how to do anything besides run the street. Something that I enjoy doing. I do it in my spare time. I'm starting a business called Change Ray Detailing soon. So yes, sir, I will be doing this for the rest of my life.
It's so different than running in the street, isn't it?
It's very different. It's safer.
I mean, first of all, it's safer. It's legal. First of all, okay. I mean, that's obvious, right?
Yes.
But I mean, in terms of how you live from day to day, you don't worry about being arrested for auto detailing, right?
Of course.
So I wonder about you when you were in your 30s. Now you're in your early 40s. This running in the street thing, is it because it's all you knew? Is all you knew what, selling drugs, selling heroin, or what were you doing?
Well, just all I ever knew was to be a hustler. That's all I ever done since I was 14 years old was sold drugs. I didn't want to do anything else but that, sad to say. But when I've gone through the programs and realized that there's a better way, I took advantage of it.
Did anyone along the way ever say to you, maybe you ought to try doing something else instead of going in and out of prison? Maybe this isn't working out for you.
Yes, I heard it along my way years and years, and thought I would never get old.
You thought you'd never get old?
Old meaning, like, I never even thought about being old and retiring and having grandchildren. I'm also a grandfather, So I feel as though it was just time to change my life.
What did you think about all those other people out there standing waiting for buses to go to jobs or in cars going to jobs or walking over to Hopkins to work someplace wearing a uniform? Did that look like a whole different world to you? Did that look foreign to you?
Yes, it did look foreign to me. I'm just thankful for the opportunity to come through the programs, and people have faith in me to do well, to be able to just be able to go to work every day.
And now you're part of that, right?
And I'm part of that world.
But I was
today.
Curious, like when you were running in the street, I mean, you would see the rest of us going to work. What did you think of that?
Thought nothing of it.
That wasn't for you?
It wasn't for me. You know, I just never thought anything. It was too hard, You know?
Did you try to look for a job after any of the times you were in prison?
Yes, I did. I worked.
Because I would like to know what that was like for you.
Well, I've gone through what is that called? Temporary services for jobs, and I also worked on a shipyard for 6 years. I got tired of doing that. Also, you know, nice job, benefits, and everything.
Really? Yes, so you walked away from that?
I walked away from that to go back to the streets again.
Because it was more lucrative. You'd make more money, make it faster. Was it the hustle?
The hustle was addictive. It's an addiction. It really is. The lifestyle. You know, I think it was the lifestyle and just being able to be your own boss. You know, so today what I do, I just flip that mentality into the good mentality and just do the right thing today. So
So now with auto detailing, with Diamond Detailers, can you just, I'm just curious how this works. Do people drive their vehicles to you? Do you go to their homes or where they work and do it?
No, sir. Well, I work for different dealerships.
Dealerships,
yes,
okay.
Sir. So that's how we get out business when people come to get their cars cleaned. We detail their vehicles.
And now, how is your life from day to day? How do you feel about all this?
Man, my life is great today. You know, my life is, I can't even explain how happy I am today. My family is great. Everybody loves me. I'm a leader.
When I was talking to Alfred a few minutes ago about what made the difference for him when he got out of prison, he talked about all this support that he's had from family and from folks at Vehicles for Change. Now, how about you? How has your family been in terms of supporting you since you got out of jail the last time?
Well, my family's always supported me. It was me. You know, like I said, my mom, I have a great mom. She's always loved me till I learned to love myself. She's always been supportive of me, you know, and so I give all praise to God and my mom, and I thank for all the programs and people who have faith in me to do well.
Well, I wonder where you'd be if it wasn't for a program, because we hear a lot about ex-offenders just trying to find jobs out there and their criminal records being used against them. And, you know, it's tough.
It's very tough, you know. And I don't think that I probably would be in the place that I am today if it wasn't for the programs, because I feel like once you complete the programs, doors open and people are willing to take more chances with you.
Yeah, that's the thing I've noticed over the years with all these programs is they stand behind you. It's not only that you get training, it's just that when you go to pitch for a job, apply for a job, you've got an organization standing behind you saying, hey, he graduated, he went through our program, give him a chance, right?
Yes, sir, it makes it easier, yes.
Yeah. So, Edward, okay. So, Edward Ray from Diamond Detailers for now, you have any ideas about having your own business?
Yes.
What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I'm working.
You could be a freelance detailer, couldn't you?
Yes, sir. I'm working towards that. Like I said, I do my detailing on the weekend on my own. My website is Change Ray.
Oh, so you're already doing that?
I'm already doing it.
Oh, excuse me. It's called Change Ray?
ChangeRay@gmail.com. Change Ray. @gmail.com.
Okay. So you have your own website?
Yes, sir.
So you're already doing independent detailing?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Well, I got to keep my eye on you. I might be able to use your services, Edward.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Edward Ray is our second guest today on the show, talking about the program through Vehicles for Change, their Center for Automotive Careers, that now changing unemployed or underemployed adults and jobs in automotive services. And like Alfred Johnson before him, Edward Ray, an ex-offender now, trying to do the right thing with a career in auto detailing.
Yes, I'm doing the right thing. I try and do anything. I'm doing the right thing, sir.
Okay. We're going to take another break here. And our third story, Tavon Williams will be joining us to talk about his experience and how the Center for Automotive Careers at Vehicles for Change helped him. So this is Midday. Dan Roderick's here. Another break on our show. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Roderick's here. Some interesting facts about the organization we're discussing in this hour of the show, Vehicles for Change. Since 1999, Vehicles for Change has sold more than 4,700 cars to families in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. I was interested in this. They say awarded the cars, but actually the cars are sold. On average, the Vehicles for Change recipients pay about $750 for these reconditioned, repaired vehicles that people donate. And low-income families get these automobiles. It helps them get to work, helps them get to the child care or whatever they need, helps them live their lives. It was founded in 1999, the mission to repair donated cars and award them to families with financial challenges so that they can gain or maintain employment. And then Vehicles for Change started this other program. I was glad to see this, to focus on training, job training, for automotive repair. It seemed to make a lot of sense, and automotive detailing. So that's what we're talking about in this hour of the show. Since last September, the Center for Automotive Careers, this new component of Vehicles for Change, has admitted 36 students. 20 have graduated. 8 are Vehicles for Change paid apprentices, and 13 are already employed, and that's good to hear. Our next guest, Tavon Williams, has gone through the center as well. Tavon, nice to have you on the show today.
Thank you.
Yeah, joining Edward Ray and Alfred Johnson here today. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Where did you come from today? Are you on the job or are you still in training? What's going on in your life today?
Well, right now I'm working on my own.
You're working on your own in auto detailing?
Auto detailing, yes, sir.
Now, you're the young one here today, Tavon. You're 31 years old?
Yes, sir.
And so let's go back a few steps, a few years to when you were a teenager in Baltimore. Talk about that part of your life. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up on Alhambra Avenue off of Old York Road, Cold Spring.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And what happened? Because we know you got into trouble. We know you ended up in prison. So tell us about your life growing up and how you ended up in trouble.
Well, my life growing up, I had a good life growing up. Church family. Going home, both sides of my family, mother and father in my house, sister. Went to school. I did karate when I was little. Went to school for wrestling. I graduated from Mergenthaler, welding, and I let all that go to waste running in the streets.
Why? What happened? What happened there? You went to Mervo?
Yes, sir.
And you got a degree in welding?
Yes, sir.
And welders make pretty good money.
Yeah. I was the second top welder in my class at the time.
So what happened?
Just wanted to be a follower.
Didn't want to be a leader, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to do your own thing?
That's how I can explain it now that I'm older. I just wanted to follow.
Did you join a gang?
Well, I wouldn't call it a gang, but
I only ask because I know Old York Road there was some gang activity
right.
years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I basically was representing my block.
You were representing your block?
Right.
In what way?
In all the negative way that's possible.
There was the drug activity, you would control the drug activity, or you would work for others selling drugs?
Well, I would a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm. Did you like the money?
Well, I mean, at that time, I was young, so it was more stupidity in it. Like, I just liked to be, you know, on the block. I thought I had potential to run the block and all this nonsense, a bunch of nonsense.
How did you balance that with going to school? Because it sounds like you might have liked school. Did you like Mervo? Did you like welding or not?
Well, I love welding. I didn't like school.
You didn't like school, okay. Well, how come you didn't just go find a welding job?
Well, I actually in 11th grade year, I went to work study and I welded at Fabricated Steel. And see, I came up the porch late. I was a late bloomer. I waited till I got older to start doing dumb stuff in my life.
So when, in your 20s?
Well, I'm gonna say 18.
Oh, not till 18.
Yes, sir.
Well, you got into some serious trouble at 18.
19.
19. What happened?
Well, I was in a bad fight around my way on my block, and
did you have a gun?
No, sir.
Did you ever have a gun during that time?
Yes, sir.
But what happened in the incident that got you in the biggest trouble?
Well, somebody was killed on the scene and brought back to life at the Lady Hospital, and I was accused for attempted murder.
With a gun?
No, sir, for beating someone to death.
It was a fight?
Yes, sir.
And this person went into, what, a coma or something?
For 9 months, and he was brought back to life.
Okay, so he came out of the coma.
Yes, sir.
So what were you charged with, Tavon?
I was charged with first-degree attempt murder.
And what was your sentence?
Well, actually, I fought the charge for 2 years, and
I should establish that you were convicted. Were you convicted of that?
No, sir. I was non-processed of a technicality, and it was dropped down to second-degree assault. And I was sentenced to probation, 3 years probation, 10 years suspended at that time.
Did you go to prison?
Yes, sir.
And when you went to prison, what was that for? For violating probation or something?
Yeah, well, I actually went to prison multiple times, sir. First time I went to prison, I was sentenced 18 months. The second time I went, I was sentenced to 8 years. And the last time I just came home just now, I was accused of having 2 handguns.
And how much time did you do the last time?
The last time I did 27 months.
Okay. And so you got out, you did have guns, and they caught you with guns.
Yes,
sir. The last time you went in, it was for guns.
Yes, sir.
And when you say you just got out, do you mean like this year or last year?
I got out December of last year.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. So at that time, Tavon, what are you, 30 years old? When did you turn 31?
I turned 31 November 25th.
Okay. So you're 31. Mm-hmm. You're coming out of prison. You're going to go back to Old York Road, Alhambra Avenue. What are you going to do with your life?
Well, at the time, my main thing was to stay away at that time because I received a lot of changes while I was incarcerated this time. God been talking to me, you know, and it was basically to the point where as though it was either do or die, either you going to listen to what I'm saying or I'm going to take you away from here. And that was it. So when I come home, my whole thing was to do the right thing as possible, much as possible, do the right thing. And that's how I actually came to Vehicles with Chains. God gave me that company.
So you turned to God in prison.
Yes, sir.
Were you part of a religious or faith group in prison? Or
well,
did this come to you on your own?
Well, like I said, I grew up in a Christian home. My family, my grandmother's a preacher. I have an aunt that's a preacher. My mother's been in church, and I go to a church now. And it's just that was the last thing on my mind at that time. I just wanted to be somebody who I really wasn't. And that's what most of us do. We just got to follow who we really are instead of just being something that who we not are.
I'm trying to imagine you in prison at 29, 30 years old, mm-hmm. right? Again, because mm-hmm. this sounds like it's like your third or fourth time in there.
Yes, sir.
And you're hearing the voice of God now. So you're turning to God because you're a little desperate.
Well,
you're thinking, I don't want to come back here. I mean, did the light go on and say, you know, Tavon, this isn't working out for you?
I'm going to be honest with you. At that time, it's crazy. Before I got locked up this time, for some reason, I'm outside. I'm drunk. I'm out my mind. I'm sitting on a porch. I'm laying on a porch on Alhambra. I'm drunk. I got a gun in my pocket and everything. And I just pray in my head. I said, I'm so drunk. I don't, you know how some people say, they pray to God, like, God, please don't let me drink no more. I just prayed on that. I said, God, please just don't let me drink no more. I got locked up 2 weeks later. And so in the process of me getting locked up, I'm saying to myself, well, how I'm going to get there? How I'm going to get home? Because, I mean, basically, it was a bad situation. And I just prayed, I prayed, I prayed, I prayed. I just,
it was
know?
A bad situation, meaning you were going to go back to prison again.
Yeah.
This is going to
yes.
keep happening.
Yes, yes.
So that's what I wonder about. It's like, yes. when does the light come on and you say to yourself, I don't want to do this anymore? Because that must have happened.
That's what happened. It was my last resort. I didn't know who to call on.
Well, you know, Edward Ray went until his early 40s. You were in your early 30s, so it hit you earlier. Is that it? What is it that hit you?
God hit me.
Yeah?
That's my story. That's just, I mean, like I said, it ever since I really, you know, pushed myself towards that way, mm-hmm. all these opportunities just come to me of the goodness of God.
So you came out of prison
yes.
the last time. It was only last year.
Yes, sir.
Right? And now you're thinking, well, if I go back to Old York Road, I might get sucked into the old crowd, right?
Yes, sir.
And were you still drinking when you got out?
No, sir.
So you stopped drinking while you were in prison?
Yes, sir.
And you haven't been drinking since then?
No, sir.
Okay.
Never even had the crave.
So what did you do with yourself? Did you look for a job?
Well, when I came home, I've been trying to get a job, and I went through programs. I went through the Goodwill program, and I went through...
For ex-offenders.
Right. Well, all of them. Mm-hmm. It has to be... You have to go through an ex-offender program because your chances are real slim of getting a job if you don't do that, because you got to... They teach you a way to properly communicate in the interview, and it's just certain... Like I done been in programs where, though, you got guys that just coming out of jail, and they just coming in there, hey, what's going on with you, boss? Something like that, right in the interview. And a guy looking at you like, never mind, sir, the next interview.
So you got some training in how to present yourself
yes, sir.
To a possible employer.
Yes, sir.
Right? You heard in Baltimore City about this effort to ban the box, the job application, the little box on the job application that asks you to check off whether you have a criminal record or not. Did you ever get to that point when you were applying for a job? Where you had to tell somebody you had a criminal record?
Yes, sir.
And what did they tell you to do in that situation?
Well, I graduated from the mayor's office and up MOD. And,
the mayor's office of employment development?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And
what did they tell you to do when it came to the box on the application?
Right. You always tell the truth. That's the main thing. But you don't stress on the issue of how the charge was or what it is. You put down plainly what happened, and you present yourself how good you can do the job. That's it. I mean, you can't lie on the application.
Focus on the future and don't argue about
right,
the past.
Right. You just let them know what you did. You let them know that it was a mistake. Mistakes that everybody make. I mean, we all come out making mistakes. So you just let them know what happened, and then you just present yourself on the future.
So, and you put yourself into a program. You went to the mayor's office of employment development.
Yes, sir.
So how did you get to Vehicles for Change?
Well, I was just desperate for looking for a job at that time. I mean, it got so sad I couldn't even get a job at McDonald's. I was like, God, I ain't never think of that.
Well, that's why I asked you about banning the box. Mm-hmm. Do you think you were turned down for jobs because the jobs didn't exist or because they didn't want you because of your criminal record?
I think it was the criminal record, sir.
You know for sure, but you don't know for sure. No one ever said to you, Look, we don't hire guys who go to prison for guns.
Well, never verbally said it, but they will definitely give you the feeling, though. Okay.
And that was true even at fast food places?
Yes, sir. I mean, I was surprised that I really couldn't get a job there. I mean, so that's why I knew I had to go through the interview.
Tavon Williams, did you ever think about applying for a welding job? Because you had learned, you said you liked welding back in high school. I know that was some years ago now, but...
Right. Well, I'm going to be honest with you. The way it was going, I just basically looked at it like I won't start baby steps first. If I can't get a job at McDonald's, then I'll just try to start slow before I go ahead looking at a full welding job.
So you ended up at Vehicles for Change.
Yes, sir.
Who told you about that?
MOD.
At the mayor's office.
Yeah, I was actually going there just to do everything about my... They was helping me with my interviewing skills. They was helping me with being federally bonded, all these kind of things. And Mr. Grimes, he came in, and that's one of the program's directors. And he just basically said, look, how are you doing today? I said, I'm doing fine. He said, look, I want you to come in. Do you want to do this training? This is the first time we're representing this, and I want you to represent it for us. I said, okay.
So they had just started their program.
Yes.
The automotive program.
Yes.
And he told you it would be in automotive detailing?
Detailing. Yes, yeah. Sir.
Had you ever done any of that before?
No, sir. To be honest with you, at that time, I ain't even really had a lot of respect for detailing. I just thought you just, like, what's up?
You're just washing a car.
I mean, right. Come on now. Can't be that serious.
So it is a little more serious than that.
Yeah, it's a whole lot more serious than that.
What do you like about it?
Well, I like about detailing cars is when you get a rugged car and you make that car look brand new and you see the person's face when they come receive that car, that's everything for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I detail many of cars at Vehicles for Change, and they let the people come in that we donate the car to, and they had the biggest smile on their face. And they just say, well, there's one of the detailers right there.
So you're turned on by that.
Yes, sir.
That's great, Tavon. I had a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
And Edward Ray is still here, and Alfred Johns. I want to ask you all this. When you living your life now, you don't want to go back, right? None of you are interested in going back to that life that you had before. But when you come back to Baltimore, right? This is where you lived before, right? Do you see guys who you used to run with? And I'm just curious what that is like when you encounter somebody that you ran in the street with. I don't know if it happens, but if it does happen, what is that like? Do they ask about what you're doing? Do they try to suggest, you know, you come back to the street with them? Tavon, you want to take that question first? Does that happen to you?
Well, actually, I see my friends, and I love them. I mean, like I said, I grew up around there since I was 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I see them, and to be honest with you, they just, it's like they know where I'm at in the state of my life, so they just leave me where I'm at. They don't bring nothing negative to me. They, you know, I can get a phone call, like one of my homeboys, he say, man, Tate, man, look, man, I ain't even drinking today. You know what I mean? It's just all positive.
That's good. And what about you, Edward? What's been your experience with that?
Well, you know, what I do today is I just hang around all positive people, you know. I have new friends. Mr. Phil Holmes has been very inspirational to me. Dumb to death like a father.
At Vehicles for Change?
Yes, Mr. Right. Phil Holmes, yes. Mm-hmm. And when I ride through, I just beep horns. I don't stop.
Okay.
I just beep and keep going.
Okay, okay. And Alfred, that might be tougher for you to answer since you were away for so long, right? I wonder if any of the old gang from, you said Lafayette?
Yeah.
Years ago?
Some of them I see, some have went on to successful lives, others haven't, some have passed, and even some guys that I've seen have been incarcerated with. But for the most part, those who respect me are happy for me. Who know the change, even my family members. And I believe in to truly change, you have to change your friends and your conditions. So those places I don't go back to.
Yeah.
I
wonder just if you had anything to say on the air from the time remaining for you know, we're still dealing with teenage boys, especially boys in their early 20s, still out in the street. You know, we still have homicides in Baltimore City. We still have drug dealing. We still have gangs. I just wonder if, you know, you're here, you have a chance to voice something, some message on the air today. What would you say to them? I had asked Alfred earlier, you know, if you could go back and talk to a 17-year-old boy yourself, what would you say? What about you, Edward?
I would just tell young people today, you know, there's a lot of programs that'll give you help out here, and you just have to take advantage of them because I witnessed to that is when I change, you know, you have to change people, places, and things, you know. And I understand how hard it is because it took me, I stayed in the street 28 years, so I can relate to it, but I also can relate to it. When you give yourself a chance, only good things can happen for you.
Mm-hmm. And go to a program and get some support.
Go to some programs and, yeah. You know what I mean? Need more programs to help people, so.
How about you, Tavon? What would you say? I mean, you're 31.
Yes.
Someone who's maybe 14 years younger than you. What would you say in their late teens, still in the street?
To be honest with you, I would say go to church, man. Pick a Bible up. That's a lot of people's problem. They want to run away from it.
So that's where you found your answer.
Yeah, that's where I found mine.
Yeah. And what are you going to do now, by the way? Are you going to detail for somebody? Or what are you doing today, and what is your plan?
Well, I'm detailing on my own. My company name is LT New Beginning Auto Detailing.
LT New Beginning Auto Detailing? Oh, sorry.
It's a new beginning.
Okay, so what do you do? Go to people's homes, or do you go to where they work, or what do you do?
I'm in a process right now that I talked to Mr. Marty, the president of Vehicles for Change. They're going to donate me a van so I can start doing it mobile. But as of right now, I have a garage, actually, and I've been doing appointments, getting people cars out of there.
Excellent. Very good. Way to go, Tavon. I hope that works out for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it sounds like it is. So great to have you on the show. Thank you very much, Tavon Williams, Edward Ray, Alfred Johnson, all for being here today to talk about this. A fairly new component of a program that's been around since 1999. This is a program of Vehicles for Change. To provide training in automotive careers. First, auto detailing, and that's where Tavon and Edward got their training. And now Alfred Johnson in the actual mechanic side of things, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Now you have to go back to work, Alfred?
Yes.
Yeah. You're still on duty. Okay. Very much. Thanks very much for being here.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Please enjoy lunch today. Lunch comes to us today from the Veranda over in Hamden on 36th Street, serving homestyle Indian food. They're open 7 days a week for lunch, 11:30 to 4 p.m. So we have lunch for you guys, and thanks for being here. And good luck
to you.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. That's the first hour of Midday. As I say, we take a break for lunch right now. The Veranda, thanking them for providing lunch for our guests. And we have the second hour of our show coming up, so please stay tuned for that after the news from NPR.